Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Commander Rob Hansen, Nancy Hansen, and Dr. Paul Hall in Raising Expectations.
Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and we're so glad that you tuned in tonight on Raising Expectations. And as we always say, the whole team hopes that tonight, everything that is said and the things you hear will raise your expectations for great days ahead in this thing we call Life in America Today. I'm Joe Schofield. It's a pleasure to have you with us, as I've said. Always like you to know our family hosts here. We've got a great team. I'd like to tell you very quickly, this team is comprised of our co-host, Commander Rob and Nancy Hansen. Rob's a former Top Gun pilot, trainer and leader and a commander. And we've got Dr. Paul Hall, who is a retired pastor, theologian, and he's a great guy also. These guys are your family, and most of you know, but if you're new tonight, we want you to know who they are. And then we also have Stephanie and Craig Thayer. Stephanie's a health specialist. They're the healthy-looking ones up in the other corner that you're going to see. And Tank, her husband, Dr. Thayer, is a special surgeon in trauma area who takes care of things that would really make us worried, but he handles it smooth. It's really great. You're going to get to know these guys and really enjoy them. We're going to do something special today. We're going to move right along for time. Commander Rob has some really wonderful friends. I know that you might find that hard to believe, but no, he has some wonderful friends. No. We have fun together, and I hope you learn to understand that too. Rob is a wonderful guy. He's been a great commander, a leader. The thing that impresses us is he's been a servant of people, and we love and appreciate he and Nancy, all of us on our team. He has a wonderful friend, Commander Randy Cunningham, Navy ace, former Top Gun instructor, coach, and much, much more. And what we're going to do tonight, gang, is we're going to kind of shift it over and ask Rob to share his friend with us tonight. So on behalf of everybody, Randy and Mrs. Cunningham, we're so thankful that you're with us tonight. God bless you, and we're anxious to get to know you a little. And Rob, Nancy, would you take here and introduce your friend and just lead us through our program tonight?
You bet. I'm very proud and honored to introduce Duke Cunningham, one of my all-time idols and a fellow Miramar guy, also a fellow former Black Knight. I know I did one tour in VF-154, the Black Knights. I think, Randy, you did two in the Black Knights. Duke Cunningham was actually a historical figure. I first met him when I was a newly winged guy being sent to VF-124, the F-14 training squadron. But before I got there, there was about a 2.5 month wait to just start. So I became what we call a stash. I was stashed at VF-126, the Bandits, the adversary squadron that flies against all the F-14 squadrons at Miramar, and they play the bad guy airplanes. At the time, Duke was the executive officer, and I think Nick Chris was the skipper, if I recall, Clam.
Right.
And I think it was John Finley that called Clam the world-famous battling bivalve, which is fighter humor, if you guys can appreciate that sort of thing. In the 2.5 months or so before I started the RAG, I got to go through the instrument school, which is something that 126 ran, if I recall. And
spin school.
SEER school, which I was the SRO, so you know how much fun I had. Now, I know Randy told me that when he went through SEER school, I think you had some busted ribs, which gives you an idea that they're very realistic when it comes to POW training. We also did, I think it was one flight in a TA-4 against, I think, a Top Gun class, which for me was a blast because I hadn't flown in about 3 or 4 months. And Randy showed me why he was an ace, flying an airplane to its absolute limit. I learned how to pull G's again. Just to give you an idea, Duke was a recipient of the Navy Cross, which is the second highest award below the Medal of Honor. He was actually put in for the Medal of Honor, and for whatever reasons, politically, I'm sure, got downgraded to the Navy Cross, which is still pretty darn impressive. In addition, you know, Distinguished Flying Crosses, Air Medals up the yin-yang, Purple Heart, probably one of the most decorated naval aviators of the entire Vietnam War. And of course, a graduate of the University of Missouri, which I'm happy to say my nephew graduated from and also went to law school there. So there's sort of a connection as well. What I wanted to talk a little bit about at the beginning for Duke is, you know, because you came into the Navy in the mid 60s, when Vietnam was really starting to, you know, increase and heat up, what motivated you to actually come into the Navy and go into naval aviation to begin with?
My mom and dad were unfortunately Democrats, but they told us that we had a responsibility to our country and the president. One of my classmates, Ron Cullors, joined and the Marine Corps. And Ron, you saw a picture of a helicopter going down in flames. Ron was killed. We had another one of my classmates, Phil Harrison, that ended up flying F-8s. And I'd always wanted to fly. Mm-hmm. I joined when I was at Hinsdale High School coaching swimming and football. I had gone out to the local airfield, and an Air Force colonel was my instructor. And I enjoyed it so much. You know, I just always loved flying. Mm-hmm. And I made up my mind that if they'll take me, then I will join the service. I actually tried the Air Force first, but they wouldn't guarantee me that I could fly fighters. And I didn't want to fly cargo airplanes hauling rubber dog manure. I wanted to go and fly airplanes. Okay?
That was their loss.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. So the Air Force wouldn't give me that. When I went to the Navy, they gave it to me in writing that if I was number one or two in my class, that I would get fighters. And I got fighters. So it started on from there, and it was just a love of flying, of looking at Eddie Rickenbacker and Boots Bissey in the Korean War, looking at Joe Foss, who was a good friend of mine, passed away. All of those guys, it's if you were a baseball player and you looked at Mickey Mantle and all those guys, and all of a sudden you had a chance to be one, you'd take the chance. And that's what I did. I joined the Navy, went through the training, and spent 20 years in the service.
Man, it's great.
Were you given a choice between East Coast and West Coast?
No. I just got my orders to Miramar. Okay. I remember pulling on the base and seeing those beautiful Phantoms taking off and thinking, I'm going to be flying one of those suckers.
Yep. That's so cool. That was VF-121, I think, was the Phantom rag?
Yes, it was. Like you said, VF-124 was the F-14 rag later when it came on.
Yeah. And the F-4 rag, I assume, was roughly the same amount of time, 9 months or so, to go through everything from basic.
About the same time.
Yeah.
You go through all the different phases. You go through instruments. You go through cross countries. You go through bombing. You go through tactics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a full syllabus, and you're pretty well trained when you get through there.
Yeah. And then from there, you joined your first squadron, which was that 96?
Well, like you, I was supposed to go to VF-96, and they had that fire on the Enterprise.
Oh, that's right.
And so when they came back, I was stationed, actually before they even got back, I was stationed at Top Gun as a plowback, you know, as a student.
As a plowback, yeah.
So for about three months, I went through the whole Top Gun syllabus. I rode in the back seat with all of the Top Gun instructors, got to see it from the other end, rode in some Phantoms. And so, like you, I got a little jump on the thing. And then when they came back, they had lost a bunch of people with the Enterprise fire. And the commanding officer, Early Wynn, says, Mr. Cunningham, Lieutenant Cunningham, we want you to go out and fly our airplanes that we're going to stand down and lick our wounds, but we want you to keep the airplanes going. I said, throw me in that briar patch. So I went out every day and flew two or three times a day exercising the airplanes that were left.
Sure.
And the thing was, I took the airplane up. I wanted to see how high it was, the ceiling. I said, I can make the ceiling higher in this thing. So I went up, took it as high as I could. I would go at 20,000 feet at, say, 450 knots, and I would see how many Gs I could sustain. I would take a look and see how much altitude I lost in a split S. You know, what turn rate did I have? And so I really got familiar with the airplane and what we call the VN diagram, the performance side of it. So I was pretty ready to go. And then I'd had the tactics training, and our skipper at the time believed in flying against dissimilar airplanes. Instead mm-hmm. of flying Phantom against Phantom, we flew against A-4s. We flew against F-106s in the Air Force. Anything that would fly against us, we flew.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Interesting.
And then you went from there. Did you go to the Connie? Was that your first carrier then?
No, my first carrier was USS America. We had to go clear the East Coast and
yeah.
pick up the America. We went over there, and the activity wasn't that much because we weren't going up north. Remember, President Johnson stopped the bombing in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were bombing some roads, bombing truck interdiction, hitting some various targets and stuff. And it wasn't until December of 71 when we went over there. And you remember there was a couple people that were protesting at that time with the carrier going outside of San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
We set sail on the USS Constellation and got over there. And my very first flight, we got shot at. And it was different from the first cruise. And so it was a pretty meaningful cruise on that. And you earned your potatoes for that one.
Oh, yeah. Connie was, I did three cruises on the Constellation as well. Maybe stayed in your same stateroom. I have no idea. But good ship. And everything worked well. Also, and I should point this out, Randy also was the author of Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About His Experiences. This is a pretty beat up copy, but it's called Fox 2. Randy wrote it. I highly recommend getting it. You'll enjoy it. You'll find out what it's really like to have been an aviator in Vietnam, getting shot at. And fortunately, we don't want to spoil the fun, but I wanted to plug the book.
It was fun.
it was inspirational to me when Randy gave me my first copy of it. He signed it, and I was pretty excited as a newbie to have, you know, the real ace of the base and a no kidding naval aviation hero sign the book. One of the things too, Randy, one of the greatest things that I learned from him is he once said, you fight like you train. And so what I think Randy was able to do with all the younger folks that came after him was sort of instill that in all of us, that our training is so realistic. You fight in the real world in combat the way you train. And the only difference in peacetime versus wartime is we'll end up doing the same things that you do in combat, short of, you know, either shooting a missile at somebody or being shot at by somebody or a surface air missile in AAA. And that's one of the things I think you learn the most, and why in an earlier episode here when I had the other two guys, Tomcat guys from Miramar on, when we talk about having been very fortunate to have had the Vietnam era guys as at Miramar at the time we were there, they were able to pass their corporate knowledge on down to all of us. And then, of course, when I became a RAG instructor at 124, hopefully I was able to do the same thing that they did all of us back then.
I was fortunate that our squadron had some of the top lieutenants. Steve Shoemaker had been a former Blue Angel with Keith Crenshaw. Cannonball was his call sign. We had Matt Conley, got two MIG kills, and his backseater was, I'm having a senior moment here, Tom Blonsky. Okay. And so we had some real good talent that flew, and you flew with guys that you knew that they had your back.
Yeah. I remember the name Seacow, Jerry Sullivan. I think he was another guy that.
Seacow, yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember. I thought maybe he was with Blonsky. That's neither here nor there. One of the things, too, I have to mention, I know when I was at 126, a couple of guys I went to school with, Dave Burdeen and Tom Bauer, were at 126 there as bandit flyers. Jethro Burdeen, I'm still in touch with his wife. Unfortunately, Jethro passed in a plane crash about 10 or so years ago. Tom ended up moving over to the East Coast, and I kind of lost track of him. When the deployments came during Vietnam, and I know that you mentioned in the book, and this is sort of a mindset issue, when you leave port, you know, you were worried because of the war being heated up so much that you were worried about not ever being able to come back. And I was wondering if you could kind of expand on, you know, that kind of a mindset you have when you're going off on a deployment into a war zone, what that's like.
Well, I remember when the Connie pulled out and they had people with candles on the outside protesting. That's kind of disheartening when you're going out to fight for your country and you have that. But again, you've got the people that surround you, our enlisted guys. I saw plane captains cry when their pilots didn't come back. You're like a big family. Mm-hmm. And when you're on that boat, that stuff, you kind of put that behind you. It hurt, sure did. But you get right into the schedule. And all the way from the enlisted guys to the guys in the squadron to the commanding and XO, you're a big family. And that played an important part, I know, for me.
Mm-hmm. I should probably...
When you came home?
Go ahead, Steph.
How was it when you came home? Did you experience backlash, or did you stick close to those that you had been in service with? How was it for you when you came home?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of people that came back from the war were chastised by, you know, various groups. I didn't have that. I was pretty well put in the limelight. I went into New York City. Matter of fact, Willie Driscoll, my backseater, one of the news guys, was interviewing Willie. And these are the words that he used. He says, "Mr. Driscoll," he said, "you were up there fighting against the Vietnamese and you butchered three North Vietnamese pilots on 10 May. He said, "What?" He said, "You had a hard time going through swim class. You're coming down over the water. They're shooting at you. What thoughts were going through your mind?" Now, Willie's an Irish guy from Boston, and he looked at the reporter and he said, "Sir, I thought perhaps I'd made an incorrect decision in leaving the Army Reserves." And so, but that's what you get through and stuff. But we traveled all over the states. I sat down with anti-protesters. One of the things that bothered me is they knew every fact and, you know, every dot and everything that was there. We just knew what we had to do and to survive and save our wingmen and guys on the ship. But it came out pretty good for me. I was thrust. We traveled with the Admiral's airplane in two or three cities every day. And it got to be pretty tiresome in that, like selling war bonds. But we sped the message on what our guys were going through. And it wasn't just there that we had the problems. We had we had lost one of our guys, and the captain of the ship, Captain James D. Ward, said, hey, we're going to take the ship off out away from any threats, and we're going to have a stand down. We're going to have barbecues on the flight deck. We're going to have, you know, a little band of the guys come up and stuff. So we're doing that, and the press was out there. And they asked a good friend of mine, George Gorionic, A7 driver, how do you feel about, you know, flying? He says, hey, I'm flying a hot little airplane, and, you know, I enjoy flying. Well, the word came back in the press that here's a guy flying an A7 that loved killing and butchering pilot, you know, Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you go through with that stuff. And matter of fact, when I got my first air-to-air victory, they came on to do an interview with me because no MiG had been shot down in 2 years. I called the Admiral and I said, Admiral, I'm not talking to these rats. I said, they're like Antifa today. They're a bunch of, we call them DRCPBs, dirty, rotten, pinko communist bastards. And but I didn't want anything to do with them. The Admiral looked up and said, my lieutenant doesn't want to talk to you. Get off my boat. Well, when I got my second kill, here they came again, and I was in the airplane ready to launch on an Alert 15, and here they came, and I keyed the mic, and I said, Admiral, I don't want to talk to these guys. The Admiral kicked them off the boat again, but on 10 May, 2 days later, when I got three kills and became the first ace in the war, I was also shot down and pretty hurt. My back was injured. My legs and shoulders were separated and hurting pretty bad. And I'm down in the hospital ward, and Admiral Cooper came over, CTF-77, and he said, how you doing, Duke? And I said, well, I'm doing great. I'm ready to go flying again, you know, sir. He said, well, he said, you know, we've been waiting a long time to beat the Air Force at this, and we want you to talk to the press. And I just started to say, Admiral, and he said, Lieutenant, I would strongly recommend that you do this. So I knew what he said. And I said, well, what do I have to do? He said, you hear that helicopter upstairs? It's going to take you to Saigon. So they shipped me into Saigon, and I ended up talking to those Air Force pukes.
That's how we talk, everybody, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got some of my best friends are Air Force weenies. I just don't want my daughter to marry one of them. But then I went into Saigon and talked to them. And matter of fact, there was about 3,000 people in this huge auditorium. And the day, that night, they had Australians coming in there, and they had three strippers that were going to perform. And one of the generals came up and said, gentlemen, we've got America's first fighter ace in the Vietnam War, and he's with us tonight. And they looked around, and I had my ice cream suit on. Well, they picked me up, and my back was really injured. They passed me hand over hand up on the stage. Mm-hmm. And they were yelling, speech, speech. And I said, I don't know about you guys. I just want to see the show. And they went, yeah. So they let me go back and eat my steak. And so it started off from there.
That's right. I think that's even in your book too, Fox 2. It's a great story. Yeah. Paul, do you have any comments? Paul Hall, can you hear it?
You know, I'm yes. here. Duke, I want to thank you for being with us tonight. And I was reading some of the background of some of the things you've been through and the things that you've experienced. And I just had one question to start. We're seeing a lot of really interesting things in our culture right now. Okay. You have any thoughts about where we are or what you see, what direction you see our country going? I'm really curious to hear that. I know you've had a lot of experience when you served on the appropriations, the intelligence committee, et cetera, et cetera. But I'd just like to get your sense of what's going on in our culture right now. Could you answer
that? There's always been debate back and forth. And we had a lot of disagreements, but nothing like it is today. The other side is doing everything they can to win the presidency and take the majority. They want the power. And there's no holds barred from going after the president, even when he, before he was president, doing a face thing with a dossier, which was fake. Adam Schiff lied through his teeth and trying to push that thing to impeach the president, and it was all disproven. Mm-hmm. You think about what they could have done if they would work hand in hand to help the American people. And the same thing today with the virus that's going on. Instead of sitting there working together, they're sitting there fighting each other. Mm-hmm. It's very discouraging. I'm very afraid if the president is not reelected, I wouldn't doubt that if Joe Biden becomes president with the turmoil that he's in with his son, I wouldn't doubt that the Democrats themselves would impeach Biden just to get their vice president in so that they can go further even left. Mm-hmm. I don't want to live in a socialist or communist country. And most of us grew up in a land of the free. We'd like to keep it that way. Now, I will also tell you that when I was there, we had a lot of discussions. Jack Murtha was a Democrat on the Defense Appropriations Committee with me. I did fundraisers for Jack Murtha. Newt Gingrich got after me for doing it. And so I did another one for it because Jack voted for defense more than a lot of my Republican buddies did. I know with Dale Kildee, when I was chairman of the Education Committee, Dale and I worked together hand in hand to make education better. And you have that camaraderie and you do that. But today, the speaker, Nancy Pelosi, to me, she is, and this is a personal opinion, she's the most evil, vile woman that I have ever served with or met in my entire life. Everything is about power to her. And unfortunately, it shows up in what their caucus has got to go through. Look at the vote today, a perfectly exceptional choice for the Supreme Court, and they vote against her. Mm-hmm. When Ginsburg was voted in, I think it was like 98-2 or 98-0. Republicans went along, says, yeah, we disagree with a lot of her things. She's qualified, so mm-hmm. we voted her in. Today, they're doing everything they can, from impeachment to fighting against this latest Supreme Court nominee. And you know the Democrats would have done the same thing and, you know, got somebody in there. So my hope is that in the future that we can sit down with this virus, because it's serious. It's scary and it's getting worse. When you look at the world situation that we have around in the Middle East and all the problems we have, we've got to sit down arm in arm and you know, get through this stuff. I'm afraid.
Did you have any dealings with Nancy Pelosi, Duke, when you were in Congress?
Now, before you answer that, I'm just going to break in the board up and say, folks, I love the show. You can go as long as you like. You can go straight another hour if you like. Okay. We're switching over the systems. No one's going to feel it. And I just won't be able to say goodbye at the end of the show. But carry on. Have a great show. Go another hour, hour and a half, whatever you like. I love it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I tried to go against Nancy Pelosi every chance I got. I'll give you an example. I was a speaker after she spoke, and she got up there. She was on Defense Authorization Committee. And the only reason she was on there is to cut defense and put in the great social programs. She got up as a speaker before me and talked about what a great supporter she was for defense and telling all these things. Well, I knew her record, and she voted against almost everything that helped our people in the military. And when she was going back up, I was the next speaker, and I said, would the gentlelady from California please stop and listen? I'd like to give her a couple words. Well, she stopped. She turned around in the aisle. Now, if you call somebody a liar on the House floor, they take your words down, and you can't speak for the rest of the day. So what I did is I looked at the gentlelady and I put on a little Southern brogue and I said, you know, I said, gentlelady from California, I said, my mama used to tell me if a person lies enough, they're going to go to hell. And I said, the gentlelady from California, when she dies, I'm going to be happy to buy her a bunch of fans because she's going to need them. She didn't get it. She walked back up into the cloakroom and they said, you know, Duke just called you a liar. She came screaming down the aisle, you know, saying, well, the gentleman from California, if he is a gentleman, I want his words taken down. And the parliamentarian looked at him and says, sorry, Miss Pelosi, too late. But those are the kinds of things that we got into.
Mm-hmm. So back then, the swamp was still fairly deep. And the partisanship, maybe not as bad as today, but there was still a lot of, conflict, I guess, if you will.
Sure. Well, yeah. It was like an education. Dale Kildee was the chairman when I first got there. And then when we took the majority, I was the chairman. In that first year, Dale worked with me, and I was just a freshman at that time. Helped me work through some education issues. And I called him in there when I took chairman. And I said, Dale, I'm going to work with you on education as much as I absolutely can that my caucus will allow me to do. Well, we had one event that I let Dale have 9 guests to come in and speak. I had 9. And when it was over, I looked at the whole group and I said, which one of you have any one of the other programs in there? And they looked and they said, none. I said, this is the difference between my colleague Dale Kildee. The Democrats will try and boost up money, which causes higher taxes, and try and put every single one of these programs in. Government has to be funded with the staff. It goes back to their state, their legislature, it goes through. And we get less than 50 cents out of a dollar down to the classroom. Mm-hmm. And I said that what we want to do is take those programs. And if you from Indiana, there was a person from Indiana there. And I said, if you want the program you talk about, we want to let you do that. We want you to do it without us telling you that you have to do it. And each school, if you find that it works in your particular area, why should Duke Cunningham tell somebody in Indiana what they have to spend their dollars? Maybe you need teacher classrooms. Maybe you need computers. Maybe you need better teacher training and so on. So that's what we did. And we wanted to give the people in the local areas. I had a group of Democrats that were on the school board. And, of course, they voted against me the first time. But when they saw what I was doing, they ran Democrats for Cunningham because we got more money for the schools and gave them the power to choose where they spend the money and not somebody from Washington.
And that's, I think, still the case today where, you know, on the Democrat side, we see they want to empower government. They want to grow it. They want to have it. More regulations, more taxes, and so forth. Republicans want to empower the states and the individuals. And that's something, again, you know, going back to the media, whether it was your experience from Vietnam or even what we've seen, especially in the past 4 years, the media has its own narrative, and certainly not pro-Republican. It's all Democrat all the time, or all liberal all the time. And so the general public doesn't really get an accurate picture of what's really going on, or they spin it in a way that makes everything from Orange Man bad to, the education. You know, if you don't want to fund education, you're evil, you know, whereas, you know, they don't break it down enough to show, no, we're not. We just don't want federal control over things that ought to be at the state and local level. And I know that even during the Obama administration, they played the states in education, from what I recall, where they would not fund, you know, federal funds to a state unless they complied with, you know, whatever the program was. And that's where you run into the big problems with you know, a big federal government, because you do lose a lot of local control over funding, or the feds will.
One of the biggest problem is, you've got a lot of people that go there, Republicans and Democrats, and they have their ideas and how they want to help the United States on all sides of the aisle. Mm-hmm. And the problem is the leadership. Pelosi, if you don't vote the way she wants, Jack Murtha started blasting us one day. And I said, Jack, what are you doing? He said, Pelosi threatened to take my job unless I start pulling the line against the Republicans. So, you know, they do that. We don't do that on our side. We try to persuade you to vote the right way. But it's just like tonight we had a Republican in the Senate, a lady that has a real tough district, and she voted against Supreme Susan Court Collins nominee, Maine, Susan Collins. Yeah. But you learn to understand that Susan Collins couldn't vote like I did in San Diego. If she voted like I did, she wouldn't be sitting there. Mm-hmm. So you learn that, you're mad at what they vote, you know, the wrong way sometimes, but then when you put yourself in their shoes, they have to do it. But the Democrats right now, they have to really toe the line, or they get their committees taken away. They don't get funding. And it's pretty brutal.
Yeah. They all seem to be in lockstep with each other. I guess because they have to be.
I'm sorry.
Well, I'm proud of our president. I wish he'd close his mouth sometimes. But when you take a look at what he's been able to achieve after going through 4 years of just being blasted every single day, through impeachment, through going after him for different things, but yet he still produced and he kept his promise. Every single thing, he's kept his promise. How many politicians do that? And he will keep his promise after 2020 on the things that he wants to do. He will lower taxes. He'll make it better for all Americans, for African-Americans, Hispanics, Asian, and he will do that. And I fully believe that.
Oh, I agree. I absolutely agree.
Paul, did you have another question?
First of all, Duke, I have just a statement to share with you, and then I have a follow-up question, if that's okay. I want to give a shout-out to my father-in-law, who spent 8 years in a C-130 gathering information, and he sent me a text. He listened to the show, and this is his words to you. He said, even though I'm an Air Force weenie, I would be proud to shine his boots. So,
well, ask him this question. What do they put on the bottom of a Coke bottle at an Air Force base?
What is that?
Open other end.
Yeah, he'll appreciate that. Okay. Here's my question. If you were able to sit down with the freshman representatives coming into Congress and like in an orientation session, what bit of information would you share with those freshmen, kind of give them some guidance or direction? What would you say?
Go home as often as you can, and you take care of your people back in your district. You have a good staff back there that takes care of Social Security problems, that takes care of transportation problems, and they remember that. I had a lady that came up to me. She said, Mr. Cunningham, I'm a liberal Democrat, and I voted for you. And I said, why? She said, well, Mr. Cunningham, I was a waitress, and you call my supervisor over and told him what a good job I did, and I got a promotion for that. And she said, I never forgot that. And that's the kind of thing that people look at. If you take care of your people and what you say and what you promise, then that's going to happen. Now, I made some mistakes when I was in Congress, in which I'm, sorely sorry for. But I'm living my life right now under the tutelage of Christ.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah, good one. Well, If I could, I don't want to take up all the time, but I read your story today and I was intrigued by it. And I just have a question for you that I wrote down. I wanted to share. I think as we get older, we certainly experience more. Hopefully we get wiser along the way. But what is the most desperate feeling that you ever felt? Okay, the most desperate feeling that you ever felt, and how did you deal with that?
In Congress or flying?
Just in life. You know, you've had so many experiences.
Well, I think two of them for me. One is you never think you're going to get hit. And when I pulled off a target, got jumped by a whole bunch of MiGs, shot down three of them. On the way out, I got hit with a surface-to-air missile about 25 miles over enemy territory, thinking I was going to be either dead or a prisoner of war. I rolled that airplane the 25 miles. The tail blew off, and I was coming down in a parachute. Before that, when the airplane went upside down when I first got hit, the only time I had ever asked for any divine help was when I got in trouble, like probably maybe you even did.
Sure.
And I remember thinking, God, get me out of this. I don't want to be a prisoner. I don't want to die. And the airplane was upside down, and I took the stick, and it righted itself. And I looked up, and I saw the Gulf of Tonkin ahead of me. And I remember thinking, God didn't have anything to do with this. It was just my superior flying skills that righted this airplane. Then the airplane went back upside down, and I said, God, I didn't mean it. Get me out of here. And I rolled that airplane, and that feeling that you were hit, that you read about and you see your friends are hit, and all of a sudden it's you. The second thing that I think that I went through is, a doctor looked at me and says, Mr. Cunningham, you have cancer. That was worse than getting shot down. And I fought through that. I was prostate cancer, and, you know, I've lived a long, good life. My wife now today was the first woman hired by NASA to train astronauts, which she did for 20 years. She can fix your tractor and fix your brakes, do everything you can. She's a good cook right now, and I'm very fortunate. And she is a real strong Christian lady. So God, you know, comes back. And when I landed, I had a friend of mine, Dan McKinnon, came to me, and he worked for La Jolla Light newspaper. And he said, well, Duke, and when I told him what I was trying to do is find out if there's a God or not, he said, why don't you come to church with me? He was a devout Christian. And I said, well, I don't know which church I should be. My mom and dad were devout Baptist. And he said, well, come on out and go motorcycle racing. And I'd raised motorcycles my whole life since I'd been 5 years old. And so we raced all day. And when we got back to his farm, he had 1,000 acres. He introduced me to one of the guys we're riding with. And his guy's name was Hal Lindsey. Hal wrote the late great Planet Earth, Satan's Alive and Well, New World Coming. And so we went down, and he started putting steaks on the barbecue, and there was headlights came in through the gate, and an elderly man and woman started walking down to the lake where we were, you know, breaking out the Bibles. Well, it was Ruth and Billy Graham. And so here I'd asked for help, and here they're throwing all this stuff at me. Billy, I told him the story about going upside down. He was there to do a crusade at the San Diego Stadium. He had me sitting on the podium with him, and he told that thing, and then he had me go to a couple of his crusades and stuff. Well, then Dan was the chairman of the Country Music Association, so I was on the last Country Western show in the old Ryman building before they put it into the new building. I was on there with Mom's Maybell and Dwight Yoakam, all the guys that, you know, were in country Western music that I loved. And Johnny and June Carter Cash asked me to stay with them. So I stayed with them. People don't know it. Johnny actually wrote a movie about Christ. It's called Gospel Road. Most people haven't seen it, but it's really a good program. I think Christ looks like a hippie in the movie, but you kind of get used to that kind of thing. But, it becomes a challenge being a Christian. And our pastor said, well, you know, being a Christian is like driving on a straight road. Now, we've got a road here in Arkansas that looks like a snake. And I said, you know, I said, Pastor, my life is more like Highway 5. And he said, Duke, most people in here have Highway 5 to follow. So, but we have a lot of strength, my wife and myself. And like I said, I've had some mistakes in my life, but what I'm doing is trying to rectify any of the sins that I had. And every time I think about doing something, I look and try and do it under Christ's tutelage.
That's wonderful. Duke, how did you guys meet?
What's that?
How did you meet your wife?
In church. In church, yeah.
A good place.
Yeah, she was in church, and I didn't know all the things that she had accomplished. I mean, Gene Cernan was one of her bosses at NASA, and she trained people in weightlessness and so on. She also served in the Navy. Also, she was a parachute rigger. But I'm one of the most fortunate guys in the whole world.
Sure. Now, as you know, the one of the key tenets in Christianity is forgiveness and compassion and grace, and that we're all sinners and we all fall short of the glory of God. And I kind of knew you well enough that with all the things that you had been through, I remember my first divorce was, it was painful and I felt very guilty. And it took a long time for me to forgive myself. And I don't know if you had that kind of similar feeling of, you know, we know the Lord will forgive us, but sometimes we have a hard time forgiving ourselves.
That's absolutely true. I know Christ has forgiven me, but sometimes I think, how could I be so stupid?
Because we're not perfect.
Amen.
That's right.
And we're all the same. We're all sinners, and we're all imperfect.
It looks like you got a thought for him. I can see.
Yeah, I do. We all bleed the same. So doesn't matter what color, race, or sex, or anything. So first of all, I want to thank you for your service. I'm sorry that you served at a bad time in American history, but I will say that you should know that you helped create the trauma system in the United States. The rioting and the violence that occurred in San Francisco during this period of time is what created trauma systems in the United States. And that was in a big part of Vietnam. So you're out there.
If Christ can forgive David after sending his girlfriend's husband into the battle knowing that he wouldn't come back.
You're
if he
right.
can forgive him, yeah. I think he can forgive me too.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, you've already described some miracles that you've witnessed in your life. What other ones have you seen?
You know, every day now, I've never had the feeling. I told my wife today, just we drove into Sam's Club to get some food. And I said, you know, sweetie, in my whole life, I've never felt that Christ is with me so much and that I've been blessed with you. And I've never had that genuine love in my whole life. And so I feel very blessed and very gifted. And whatever God has for me, I know he's got some kind of plan. I often think about, can you get on with it? but I know he's going to do something, yeah.
You can't minister until you've been ministered to, correct?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, but Hal Lindsey's got I was on Praise up there, and they've got a good program up there, but Hal Lindsey actually took my mom and dad over to Jerusalem, and they got to visit the tomb and things like that, so.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's take about 10 more minutes there, Rob. Maybe another question will fit in the good slot for the hour program. This is exciting. What are we being blessed?
Yeah, one thing, too, I wanted to mention one of the great things Randy did as a congressman. You know the name Lamoureux, probably. Scott Lamoureux. Yeah, Scotty Lamoureux was in VF-154 with me, and so I knew Jane and Scooter, obviously. Scooter's dad was part, I think, of the F-14 introduction development team, so Scooter's dad had actually started up getting the F-14 ready for Navy operational use. Unfortunately, the scooter that was in 154 with me passed away in a plane crash and an F-14 crash near San Diego. And Jane, actually, while you were congressman, Jane had written to you, or I think it was written to you, about seeing if she could get Scooter's grave up at Fort Rosecrans Cemetery, because I think that's where her dad, that's where his dad's buried.
I remember that. Yes.
Yeah. And she was able to do that. Yeah. Because Fort Rosecrans is full. And they won't, I think it's been full since, 1961 or something. And for those that don't know it, Fort Rosecrans is the big, on Point Loma, overlooking both the San Diego Bay and the Pacific Ocean. It's just beautiful up there. When I was going through my own plans, I found out, I can't go there. So I'm planning on Miramar National Cemetery in my case. But I just wanted to bring that up because I know Jane is eternally grateful that you were able to do whatever magic you could do as a congressman to get Scooter buried over at Fort Rosecrans. Yeah. Because I don't think anybody else would have been able to pull it off.
Well, a year ago, I ended up going back over to Vietnam. And one of the families of the pilots that I shot down that didn't survive asked me to come to lunch. And I was a little bit hesitant on going to the meeting, but I first landed in Hanoi and my executive officer was in a port turn. That's a left turn for you Air Force Wingies. And he had a MiG-17 at 7 o'clock, but he had a MiG-21 a little further behind. Well, I wanted to shoot the MiG-21. But it was a MiG-17 that was going to kill my executive officer. So I shot, the missile went by the MiG-21 and killed the MiG-17. And I met the MiG-21 driver and he said, "Duke, thanks for not picking me." And then I went down further south on the trip. We visited a lot of the pilots that I made a lot of good friends over there with the Vietnamese pilots and so on. Mm-hmm. And another one got behind me as I was shooting down one MiG. Willie, my backseater, said, "Duke, this guy is, moving in." He said, "Do your pilot stuff." And because he was closer and close, and his name was Nguyen. And I said, "Nguyen, how come you didn't shoot at me?" And he laughs and he goes, "Duke, I ran out of bullets." So yeah, it would have been nice to know that. Yeah, but I did go to the gravesite of Van Kiem. The young man was my last air-to-air victory, and he was a good pilot. He flew a good airplane, and I told his parents that, and we went to the gravesite, and I saw some family with tears in their eyes, and I asked the interpreter. They said, "Well, it's Van Kiem's older brothers and sisters." Well, when we went to lunch, through an interpreter, we sat and talked. And they said, "Well, no one has ever thought about coming to someone to the families like you have, and we want to thank you." And the two older brothers and sisters put their arms around me and said, "Lieutenant Cunningham, you are now our new brother." And I'm almost getting choked up right now. I had tears pouring out my eyes because you don't think about the families that you leave behind in this and in war, and you just think about doing your job, and it gives you a different perspective. And like I said, I made some very good friends over there. We had a guy named Nguyen Van Bay. He had 7 air-to-air victories against the United States. He looked just like Ho Chi Minh, and we sat for 2 hours and talked about tactics, and his legs were about the size of my wrist, the little guy, and the MiG-17 doesn't have hydraulically boosted controls. And I went, "Nguyen, how could you pull that airplane around at high speed?" And he just looked at me and he said, "Duke, I'm a farmer." And so, but he shot down 7 of our airplanes, and he just passed away this year. And we all sent our condolences and respect for. They were doing what they had to do for their country. I will not, absolutely not, forgive those that tortured our POWs. And the Vietnamese adamantly disavow that they ever tortured any of ours. And every POW I came back was tortured and talks about it. But putting that aside, we had a lot of common ground. Matter of fact, if China attacks Vietnam, I'll go over there and fly with the Vietnamese against China.
I don't think Vietnam and China like each other that much anyway, from what I recall.
No.
That's great.
Anybody else have a question? Anybody else?
I've got a million, but I'm
great. Rob, we're so blessed, Rob, to have you with us, Randy. Wow. It's awesome. Tank, anybody? Paul?
Doing good, Joe. I want to thank you, Duke, for sharing what you did with us. Appreciate you taking the time to be with us and to share out of your life. You know, appreciate it.
We're blessed, too, to know seriously the impact that your life had on Rob. We have grown to love and appreciate everybody on the screen that you see. And, you know, Rob is a good man. And his wife, Nancy, he's doing even a great job on him, take care of him, making sure he gets even
better. Yeah. Dude, Nancy's my third wife, too, so, you know, times a charm, right?
If you really want to thank me, go to the polls and support the president.
Absolutely.
You got it. All done, signed, sealed, delivered.
Yep.
take about 100 other people with you.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. We want to do this again. We want to have you back again. What do you think, Rob?
No, oh, absolutely.
Let me know.
I mean, I got to pick his brain about, you know, John McCain, among other people. So,
he's willing, well, John wasn't one of my favorite people.
Well,
John McCain was for John McCain a lot.
That's the impression I got.
We've heard.
Yeah. When President Bush was running, or he wasn't president then, McCain was running, and out of courtesy, I went over to the Senate side and I said, you know, Senator, you know, I want to talk to you a second. And I said, sure. I said, well, instead of having somebody tell you, you know, we're both Navy, I respect you, but I'm going to support George Bush. And he looked at me and he pointed at the door, and I won't use the expletive he said, but there is the blank door. Get out.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone would have told me that, I'd say, listen, I'm disappointed. If there's anything I can ever do to gain your support, please let me know, and God bless you. But John wasn't like that. If you were against him, that's why only two senators. Lindsey Graham's a good friend of mine, too, but I don't know why Lindsey supported John McCain, but I would have never supported. I would have supported him over a Democrat, but no. McCain is not. He got a whole bunch of people killed on a carrier by doing a hot start and blew up the carrier. So that's just a personal thing with myself.
No, and I'm with you on that. And again, you know, as naval officers, we tend to be good judges of character. And you and I are on the same page, Duke, about that. I knew his background from the Naval Academy near the bottom of his class. I knew his family history, sons of and grandson of 4-star admirals. I knew his history in flight training, where I think he trashed 3 planes just in training alone.
But let me tell you one thing that he did that I really respected. He was given the opportunity as a prisoner to come home.
Yeah.
And the code says you can't do that. John said, no, I will wait my turn. And, you know, for me, that he was a hero for that. Mm-hmm. And but we all have our faults and stuff like that, and I respected John for doing that.
Oh, absolutely. But I think you're right. From what I saw, the and your description validated what I thought. And again, when we saw him doing the decisive vote on the Obamacare thing a couple of years ago, just to spite Donald Trump,
we would have had it gone.
Yeah,
he just out of spite.
Yep.
Voted no.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got one question, Rob. I was going to ask you once, and I forgot. And maybe he's one of those guys that has the message on the bottom of the can. I don't know. But did you know Congressman Sam Johnson from Dallas?
Yes, I did. Sam was one of my best friends.
Yes, good. He's a good friend of mine, too. Hey, man. I thought. But was he Navy, sir?
Or was he was Air Force, and he was actually a Thunderbird pilot.
Yeah, oh, it was okay.
All of a sudden, cool. I couldn't remember. Yes. Sam
and I were very close friends, and I was sorry to, you know, hear that we lost him last year.
He's a good man. He's an excellent man, like you said.
He was.
Well, we're looking at our time. We definitely want to have you back on this. And you know what comes to mind, guys and ladies, is my first thought was what you all said to Randy, that you served your country one of the most difficult times. And for that, I join with everybody, want to thank you, sir, for who you are, for what you did, and for the inspiration you were to others. You served your country, but through it all, we can sense you also serve your Savior. You serve your Savior today, and because you served your country and you served your Savior also, sir, we are blessed by knowing you. I never had the privilege of meeting you, but what a thrill it is for me to hear about you and to know the things that that you stand for here. It's just a blessing. So you served your country, you served the Savior, and we have been blessed through it. I love that old saying, the ground's level at the foot of the cross. Going back far east, it's just level there, isn't it? You go back, and even those in war, you reach out to those people, and that's the heart. I'll tell you something about Rob. I can't believe I want to say this on the air, but, you know. One of the things that blessed me about Rob is, here's a guy that's done so many things in his life, but, you know, he turned around when he was near retirement. I don't know the exact positioning of this, but he went back and began to teach sixth grade or seventh grade boys math and teach them in school because he had a venue and he had a door where he could open up and they were excited he was there and he blessed them and taught them. So we concur with you, sir, when it comes to your heart. And I just look forward to knowing you better. And Rob, thanks for sharing somebody this special and this wonderful.
My pleasure. It's an honor.
Absolutely. It was an honor to have you with us, sir.
You bet. And,
Rob, I'll still meet you at 15,000 feet and have your rear end.
No question about that. By the way, were all your kills sidewinders? Were all your kills with a sidewinder?
Yes.
Okay. And you didn't have guns either in the Phantom then, did you?
No, we didn't have a gun. I'd have had more victories if I'd had a gun.
Yeah.
There you go, Joe.
Yeah. Good memory, Rob. Thank you. Yeah, I always wondered about that. They said sometimes they get so frustrated that everything lined up, the side ran and go the wrong way.
Oh, yeah.
Vote for Trump. Oh, and Mike Pence's son is a Marine, and I'm the vice president of the American Fighter Aces Association. We gave Mike Pence the Top Gun Award for flying the F-35.
How cool is that?
That's great. Hey, well, Paul, would you say a prayer and just pray for
Thank you. Pray for
Cunningham and pray for everything. Pray that we'll get to have him again and that God will continue to use him. We've been blessed. Thanks, Paul.
Sure. Father, I want to thank you for this day. Thank you for your presence, your love, your grace. Thank you for our salvation. I want to thank you for Duke, for his life, for his wife. I pray, Father, that you give him many fruitful days ahead and that you guard his heart, guard his mind, help him to sense your presence. Lord, as he seeks your face, help him to see it clearly, to give thanks and praise to you. And thank you for these people, Lord, who are such a wonderful part of my life. And I pray your blessings upon them. Help us to remember that that we're a part of a wonderful country. We want to do our part, be good citizens. And we know, Lord, that above all things, you're in control. You're the Lord. And we trust you. We love you. So keep our hearts soft and pliable. Keep us sensitive, Father, to the situations, the people around us. And thank you for using this as your tools. And may we always offer ourselves to be those conduits of your love, your grace, and to speak the words of truth, and to speak the words of truth with love. And we thank you for that in Jesus' name. Amen.
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 Stay safe.
Amen. God bless you, sir. God bless you.
Thanks, dude. Appreciate it so much.
Just call me up. Just call me up and we'll do it again.
Do it again.
All right. Let's do
give
this.
Give me a break for a few months, though.
Okay.
And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in tonight. Aren't you glad that you were here to listen in? Raising expectations. We really talked about raising today, probably 30,000, 40,000 feet. And I hope it's a blessing in your life. that you heard tonight, and go out and share what it means to trust in God. You realize he's there with you. He loves you. He gave his only begotten son to die on the cross for you. But more than that, he lives for you daily. He knows where you're going, and he's there with you just as he is with Duke. So God bless you. God keep you until we see you again next week. Have a great week, and may you fly high with all that God has in tune for you. Don't forget who you're voting for. President Trump is what we're telling you. We hope you'll be voting for, just like Duke said tonight. God bless you. We'll see you next week.
Bless you all. Thanks so much.
Bye, hope everybody.
You'll be voting for, everybody.
Just
bye.
Like Duke said tonight.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556, or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.